Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, January 31st, 2011. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our show today will inform, inspire, and encourage you. In a moment, we will begin today's episode with my guest, Sari Krevin, entrepreneur, life coach, and inventor of the Sippy Grip. Welcome to all of you, my listeners. I am so honored you made space in your schedule to join us today because I realize you have other things to do. If you're listening live, I encourage you to participate by asking questions or adding comments. You can do that on the phone lines by pressing #1 to let me know you have a question or a comment, or over in the chat room where you just type in your questions or your comments. I'll be able to see them and read them on the air. Now, if you're listening to the recorded version of the show, I want to welcome and thank you as well. Regardless of how you access the show, if you enjoy the show, don't keep it a secret. Tell other people about it. And on the show page, you're able to access the past shows under on-demand episodes anytime you want, 24/7. And there are quite a few shows there. This is the third year of my show, and it's a weekly show, so there are over 90 episodes there. I also encourage you to follow me on Twitter and on Facebook, and you can see links to those on my show page. And while you're on the show page, go ahead and add yourself as a friend of my show. That would be cool. Now, again, I'm Flora Brown, author, coach, inspirational speaker. I invite you to visit my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, where you can sign up for life coaching if you're ready to make that U-turn in your life. I am still booking personal appearances for 2011, so if you want me to speak to your group, your club, staff, event, just go ahead and submit a request on my website. There's a tab at the top of the page that says Book Flora. Or you may email me directly at flora@florabrown.com. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. Now, to get at that goal, each week I interview guests from fields such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, wealth creation, career, all of those things that contribute to our lasting happiness. Today, my guest is Sari Krevin, entrepreneur, life coach, and owner of Bugenhead, the company that produced the Sippy Grip. Now, it was in 2005 when Sari was a working mom and she created the very first prototype of Sippy Grip in San Ramon, California. She was becoming frustrated when her one-year-old son, Jake, kept throwing his sippy cup to the floor from his high chair. I can relate to that one. Or throwing it from his stroller and car seat. Sari was constantly picking up the cups that were either getting dirty or getting lost. And she says, necessity really was the mother of invention, and I could not find any product in stores or online that met my needs. Hence, the Sippy Grip was born. Another evolution of her prototype, the Sippy Grip, was carried on when she went on to other products later, and I'll tell you about those a little later. She has launched this new and successful and useful product for parents, and it's helped parents everywhere. Now, since then, she has created a pacifier holder and a splat mat, as you can tell us about those, the Passy Pouch and the Passy Bed. Krevin's products have won multiple awards, including 2 iParenting Media Awards, Creative Child Magazine Seal of Excellence Award, and was chosen to participate in Target's 2008 Parent Invented Products Program. Krevin herself was one of 2010 Puget Sound Business Journal's prestigious 40 Under 40 business people, and she's been featured in outlets including Entrepreneur, Women Entrepreneur, Hybrid Mom, and now she speaks at conferences around the world. Buchanhead products are sold in retailers such as Baby Depot, Bye Bye Baby, and Babies R Us, and of course online and internationally. Now, Krevin graduated from the University of Arizona, where she majored in human resource management with a degree from the School of Business. She's also a certified life coach whose expertise has been career coaching. Krevin recently transitioned from working full-time as human resources manager at Microsoft to concentrating her efforts to build on Buchanhead's success, productivity, and as always, she's paying it forward to her fellow mom inventors. I was about to say mompreneurs. She lives in Bellevue, Washington with her husband and their two young sons. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show Sari Krevin. Welcome.
Thank you so much. That was such a nice introduction.
Thank you. You're most welcome. I am so honored to have you today because, as we were talking about before the show, so many people have ideas. I bet every one of us has thought of some idea, some invention, and yet most of us never get our ideas out of the idea stage or the hobby stage.
Right.
So what is different about you and your background that led you to produce your first product, the Sippy Grip?
Well, I think that, I mean, my feeling about entrepreneurship is that it's something that you're kind of born with. It's not really a choice. You kind of have it in your blood and you can't help yourself. And I grew up in a household where my mother started her own company when I was 14. My father has his own business. My brother was a writer, published several books. So it's been around me for a long time, and so it's always felt like something natural and maybe not as scary to work for yourself than it might be for somebody else that didn't have those experiences. And so when I first came up with the idea for the product, it was a no-brainer. Like, well, of course I'm going to try and do this and see if I can get it on the shelf. Why wouldn't I try and do that? And I had also, previous to that, had my own recruiting and coaching company. So it wasn't the first time I'd ventured into setting off on a new business idea.
Okay. And as you were saying that about how you were surrounded with entrepreneurs, I'm thinking that those of us who weren't fortunate enough, although I too grew up with a self-employed mom, so it was, like you said, no-brainer. But people who don't have that experience, I'm thinking that's why the schools and other agencies that are offering entrepreneur training and exposing kids to business owners and the conferences like what you're going to are wonderful things to kind of compensate for the fact that, you know, because I'm thinking some people probably have the entrepreneur spirit, but if they didn't grow up in that environment, it may seem less attainable for them.
Well, I think that's a good point, and I think the thing that I've really seen is that what having that in my background did for me is take away a little bit of the fear of doing it. So they were in very different businesses. It's not like I really had any exposure to anything related to what I'm doing now, but what it did is it made it a little less scary to try and figure it out. And, you know, you make a great point. There's a lot of resources out there, and, you know, we talked before the show that we're both going to be at the Spark and Hustle show this weekend in LA, and I'll be speaking there, but I'm also going to be attending the whole conference because I get so much out of going to that as well, regardless of where you are in your journey. Connecting with other people and sharing ideas and learning from them is really the best way to put your foot forward to really do it for yourself.
Yes, that's absolutely right. So I think you hit on the idea that the knowing that it's possible makes it less scary if you know someone who has done it, even if it's not your parents, but you kind of can rub shoulders with and learn from. It makes it a lot easier. Doesn't make it perfectly easy because there's a lot of work to do, but it certainly makes you have the courage to go forward with it. Now, I'm a mom of four grown people now, and a grandma of three, they're grown too. I can visualize, when I learned about your story, I started to visualize the countless times you must have experienced frustration when your son's cup hit the floor, or worse yet, when you couldn't find it. So,
right.
Tell us a brief history of that situation that led to the invention of the Sippy Grip and the point at which you knew you had a product that you could share, or you should share, or that you would share with the world.
So when my son was just about 10, 11 months old, he was learning how to use the Sippy Cup. And in the beginning, it was more of that he was having trouble really keeping a hold on it, and it was dropping to the floor while we were while he was in his high chair, and I was, you know, constantly bending over and picking it up. And once he mastered how to hold it, he realized that it was kind of a fun game to throw it and see how many times I would pick it up. And I think the most frustrating came from when we would be going out in the stroller. Within the first minute or two, the cup was tossed off into the bushes somewhere.
Right,
and those sippy cups are, you know, the good ones are not cheap. So it was a constant, you know, battle of trying to keep it close at hand. And I went to, I think, what any other parent would go to, the major retailers, online, some local boutique stores, and I couldn't find a solution that really solved the problem for me. And so I decided to just kind of create it myself. And I went to Target. I bought an $80 sewing machine. I didn't even know how to use the sewing machine. I read the directions, sat down at my kitchen table, and just started kind of piecing things together. And a lot of the original Sippy Grips were hand sewn because I couldn't even, you know, I was getting frustrated with the with the sewing machine. And after kind of using it for myself for a little bit, it was at that point that I said, you know, I think I really have something here. I mean, it was still in its raw form, but I felt, I just had this feeling like it was just something unique. And I'm very much into creating products that solve a problem. So for me, having something that fit in a solution-based type of product line was really important. And so I started sewing more of them and decided to hand them out to my friends in my mom group. And what I did was I basically got it into the hands of every mom that I knew that was in the right age bracket with their kids, and I had them fill out an online survey through SurveyMonkey. It's a free service. And I asked them questions, everything from what would you call it, to how much would you pay for it, what colors would you want to see it in. And it was from that kind of market research that the information and the knowledge to use a grip material of some sort really came about. Because people were saying, well, it's great, but it's kind of slipping off the bottom of the cup if the cup isn't shaped a certain way. And that really... That's really been kind of with the secret sauce, so to speak, of the Sippy Grip. I mean, I have literally searched the world for the perfect grip material, and the one that I found actually is here in the U.S., and I have that shipped to my factory to be sewn into my product. But that was really when things kind of turned the corner, and I decided to really try and get it out to market. And that was in 2005, 2006. But then in 2006, in the summertime, I was recruited by Microsoft to come and join their team, their recruiting team, and they relocated my family out to Seattle. And so at that point, relocating our family from California to Seattle was a pretty arduous process. I decided to put the Sippy Grip kind of on hold for a little bit, and it wasn't until January of 07 that I really went back to it and put much more energy into launching it out to retailers, which is then what I did in September of 07. So it was a fairly long process. It probably could have been shorter if I hadn't kind of taken a break from it, but I think all of it happened in the right time for me.
Right, it did. And I want to commend you for persevering, because sometimes if there's a break in the momentum, we kind of lose our spirit and we lose our energy and courage and we kind of push things to the back burner. Who knows how many things people have in their homes and garages that they started that are great ideas, but
right. Something
broke the momentum and they didn't finish. So I
right. Commend
you for that. That takes a lot to get it rolling after
you.
A move. It does. And I want to also point out that it sounds like when you first created it, you weren't sure where to get it manufactured. You had
no.
to find all of those sources, tremendous amount of research.
Yes.
But what you did that was the most important to me is you did your market research. I think
right. Going
into business so many times, we come up with an idea that sounds great to us,
mm-hmm.
but it may not work for the rest of the world without some
right. Adjustments.
So that
right.
was such a smart thing that you did, the market research. Yeah,
I think
great.
It's, you know, it's got to be one of the first steps. I mean, after finding out if somebody else has a patent on it or if it's already out there and full force in the market,
mm-hmm.
the next step is, you know, doesn't need to be on the market. Do people want it?
Right.
Before you pour money into manufacturing, you really have to go down that road. And there have been a couple of ideas I've had along the way in growing the company that I thought were great ideas. And I got some prototypes and you know, started that market research and didn't get great feedback. And, you know, you also have to know when to say, okay, that's not going to work. You know, I may think it's a great idea, but if the feedback I'm getting generally is that it's not, you know, you can't force fit something. And I think that's really difficult for people as well, because when you're doing something on your own, it's such an emotional kind of experience, and you're so tied to it that
yeah. It's
important to know when to walk away as well.
Yeah. Especially if you're creating something that you plan to turn into a profitable business. I suppose
yes. If
you're just creating something for your own use or immediate family, friends, then it's
right. Not
as critical.
But
yeah, that's very different. But that's wonderful. Everyday employees.
Yes.
All of us have been employees. We fantasize when we're working for someone else about leaving that job to start our own businesses, but many folks never do. Now, what you did is what some of us have done, and I've done this too. While we're still working on a full-time job, we start our businesses, but we do it on the side.
Right.
But now you have a full-time business. Full-time job. You have a family. And now you have a business, which is kind of interesting when we say on the side, because it's a full-time
Is it ever really
too.
On the side? Yeah.
It's never really on the side. But this wasn't easy. Would you share with us some of the key steps that got you through those early stages of growth and into making profits in your business?
Yes. So I think the key to the growth I call it the safe growth of the business is that, I mean, I'm just kind of generally very fiscally conservative, and when I made money on the business, I put it back into the business. So for me, I didn't need to use that money for profit because I had a full-time job. So I was just constantly reinvesting in the business, and I tried not to grow too quickly. I mean, I had and still have all of these ideas of other products I'd like to do, but it's pretty expensive to do that. And so I had to really take baby steps and say, okay, now I've, you know, earned enough where I can reinvest that into other product out on the market, or reinvesting into more of a designer that really can build my brand. So it grew very organically from a financial standpoint, and for me that was really important. I have never borrowed money. I don't have any investors. It was all self-funded, and then once I was profitable, I went and formed a relationship with a commercial bank that I now have a business line of credit for new products development and manufacturing and that sort of thing. So That from a financial aspect, I think is really important. A lot of people, what I see them doing is they do have a great idea. It's wonderful, but they try and make it too big too soon. You know, I also pretty specifically haven't approached, you know, some of the really, really big retailers. Like this year, I'd really love to get into Walmart. But I don't think I've really been ready for it up until this year. And what I mean by that is, do you have the money to manufacture? Do you have the capability set up to do that and to distribute on such a large scale? And although Walmart sounds great, if you can't execute against it, your business will fail. So knowing when the right time is to kind of pace yourself and grow at a rate that's going to work for the business without losing opportunities, of course. And I also think, you know, really just kind of in general in terms of the success of the product, the single best thing I ever did in launching the business and the product was to go to industry trade show. And my the first trade show that I went to was September of 07, and it was such a sad-looking booth that I had. I mean, I had never been to a trade show like that before. I had no idea what the booths were going to look like. You had Gerber next to me and, you know, all these sorts of big brands, Graco. And here I am in this little 5x5 corner unit with only three package samples, and everything else was loose. And my uncle had come to help with the show, and because he's in the retail business, and we were unpacking boxes, and he's like, "So where's the rest of your product?" And I went, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Well, this isn't the only thing you're going to be showing, right?" I mean, it was, and I took a picture because I said, "One day I'll remember how sad this was." But it was at that show that not only did I pick up retailers, small retailers, and mid-sized retailers, but it was at that show that I was approached by Target to be in their 2008 Parent Invented Products program. So basically, they picked 16 Parent Invented products that were unknown. They put them on their shelf for 6 months, and just really did a great advertising campaign around it. And not only did I get the Target exposure, but being in that program was like an MBA in learning how to work with large retailers, how to be logistically set up for them. And so that was such a key part of my success, because after I had that experience with Target, I then went to Babies R Us with my sales numbers, with all of everything set up, ready to execute, and said, "I'm ready to go for you guys." And I knew that I could. I was confident that I could, and I've had you know, a great success with them. So, and the other thing that I just want to make sure that I mention, because it's super important, I think sometimes people lose sight of it, is that customer feedback is the single best way you're going to make your product great. So I still go on Amazon and read every single review that's on there. I've made major manufacturing changes based on a few reviews on a website. And anytime I have a customer that calls that's unhappy, you know, I want to understand why. If there's something wrong with it, I always have it sent back to me personally so I can inspect it. I think not removing yourself from that detail, you know, there's always going to be a percentage of people that don't like your product for one reason or another. That's just the way life is. But if there's something valid to what they're saying, or if I get a lot of requests for, "I really want camo," you know, and then I'll go, "Okay, well, maybe it's time to do a camo pattern." So it's just really important to kind of stay connected with the end customer to understand what they like. And the other thing about the trade show that's so important is that that trade show is for buyers to come and order your product. They're going to tell you the truth. They're not your friends and family. They're going to come and they're going to say, I mean, my first trade show, people were like, "I really like the product, but I don't like the material, and it's boring. It's just plain colors. What about some patterns or, you know, that sort of thing?" And so every year when I go to the trade show, not only do I get incredible feedback that I then use to make changes to the line, but if I have a prototype of something I'm working on, and it's mm-hmm. in a place where I can release it out for public knowledge, I always bring it with me. And when I'm talking with my buyers in general, I'll say, hey, I just want to show you this one thing. What do you think? I'd love your honest opinion. And and then that will help kind of shape if I move forward with it or not. So all of those, there's not one secret sauce, but kind of all of those things combined, I think is really what helped me gain success. I mean, you know, I think there is luck in a lot of it too. You're meeting the right people at the right time, but being smart about how you grow the business and being smart about being connected to the end user is, I think, really, really key.
Right. And I think that one of the key things, along with being in touch and being out there in the front lines with your customers, is the slow growth, because that slow growth enabled you to be ready for the next step when it came along.
Right.
And I want to say something about the industry trade show. Even though you went there and you realized when you got there that the big guys had, you know, probably much glitzier boots and lights.
Right.
All of that. But your product was what Target was looking for.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I think the part of luck that came in there was that I was in a great booth location. I was literally right on a main aisle. I couldn't have asked for a better location. And they were literally walking by. And what I had done right before the show was I'd sent an email out to some of the main retailers just kind of introducing my product. And again, pathetic little email. There wasn't a nicely, like, beautiful graphic email. It was an email with images attached. But it caught their eye enough to know, oh, yeah, I remember getting this email. So there's some luck in there, but I think what you do with that luck when the opportunity comes is really what makes the difference.
Yeah, and I want to point out, too, that even though you said your email was pathetic and your booth was
it was.
I want the listeners to know that that's kind of important sometimes to potential buyers when they are looking for new companies. You know, they're going to bypass the glitzy ones because those are already established. So don't be afraid to get out there with your – you can't wait until you have millions to set up a booth to go to a trade show.
Exactly. I think there's a point there as well, which is one thing I get asked a lot is what's kind of the – single best piece of advice, you know, you can offer to people. And the thing that I see the most is that people are held back by fear. So fear that somebody's going to steal their idea, fear that it's not ready yet. You know, they want it to be absolutely perfect before they introduce it to people. And that, as long as you're protected and you can let people know what it is. You know, I have made multiple iterations of the Sippy Grip itself. I've changed the grip material, the length, the this, the that. I'm constantly improving it. And if I had waited until I thought it was absolutely perfect, it would have been years till I had gotten it out onto the market.
Sometimes
you can't make it perfect unless the customers tell you what it is they want. So to not be held back by those sorts of things and to just kind of take that leap and go for it is really important.
Wow. We have 1 minute left, would you believe? We are at the end of today's show already. I can't believe it. I want to thank you so much for sharing these tips, very important tips. I urge all of you who have been listening to tell other people about this episode, because there are many creative moms and others out there who have ideas who are terrified to move forward with them. And I hope that you've been encouraged to move forward. Remember that the recording of the episode will be here on my radio site, the show page, at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown, or you can return at any time to hear it. I also want to thank you, Mary, for being my guest, and for my listeners.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Listeners, please join me again next Monday, February 7th at 11 a.m. for another exciting, inspiring, and informative show. Let me remind you to visit my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, and sign up for complimentary coaching to jumpstart your 2011 goals. I'm your host, Flora Brown, the radio show Color Your Life Happy, designed to help you uncover the joy you deserve. I'm coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I want to ask you to have a blessed week and to remember to color your life happy.
Color your life happy.
Color.
Every day you can choose. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
Color your life happy.